You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
If you lost Survivor and you're feeling down, David and Jessica will turn it around. They'll break down the rules and they'll show you how. You played yourself and got voted out. This is why Blank lost. And this is why Blank lost. Oh baby, this is why Blank lost.
Welcome to our final special time-traveling edition of Why Blank Lost. As we go back to the end of the beginning to look at the finale of the original Survivor season and winner Richard Hatch. Plus, of course, other things that happened in that first season. I'm David Bloomberg, and back again with me today is my friend who I might never have met if it hadn't been for Richard Hatch winning Survivor. Jessica Lewis.
That is actually very true, because without Richard Hatch, I don't think any of us would be able to say that Survivor is what it is today. He truly made the game, made the season. What an incredible cast, but you have to really like give it up for Richard Hatch. I love the guy.
Yeah.
At the time watching it, he made me crazy because he was like, what is happening? But yes, so thank you, Richard Hatch, for giving me an opportunity to then be on the show so many years later. I was, I think, 19 years old at the time when I was watching Richard win. So it's really great to have that experience and then actually be on the show. So, yeah, thanks, Richard.
Yeah. Yeah. It is my firm belief that Survivor would have been a very different game going forward if Kelly had won it. When I made him the first inductee into the Reality TV Hall of Fame, not shame, fame, I said Rich Hatch can be credited with a great deal of the success, not only for his season of Survivor, but for its continuation. Not only that, but he should also be granted some credit for the other reality TV shows created in Survivor's wake. Certainly, executive producer Mark Burnett could have woven together a good show in Hatch's absence. But it's hard to believe that it would have had quite the drama, the intrigue, and the impact.
He really was like casting gold. I was rewatching it, obviously you watch it differently when you're doing a rewatch. And I just I just kept listening to things that he was saying and the way that he was justifying his game and just the way that he would speak to the camera. All of it. It was like written for him. I mean, it was insane how well he was at all of the aspects when it seemed like so many others were kind of figuring it out.
Spoilers.
We don't want to
tell anybody what we might be thinking.
I don't want to jump ahead too soon. But he really, it was incredible to watch. He really was made to play that game. Absolutely 100% made to play that game.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned you were 19 when you watched it. And yeah, it is very weird to realize that this season was 20 years.
I know. And then I'm reminded how old I am.
Yes. Well, and I'm older. I mean, my kids were 4 and 1. It was literally a lifetime ago for them and almost half a lifetime ago for me.
No, it was crazy. Maybe I was 20 then. It worked really doing the math. But that's okay.
Yes.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah. But even so, you know, we'll still handle this the same way we've done each week, looking at how Richard did compared to the rules I originally wrote way back after season one, which were, well, based quite a lot on Richard. So I would kind of expect him to do pretty well. But I have been modifying them ever since, and some things have definitely changed, you know, since then. And we'll also have some conversations about Kelly's loss as well.
Well, you do have to talk about Kelly because she is that other half and, but an incredible other half to talk about in comparison to Richard. So this is going to be fun.
Right. Now, as regular listeners know, we watch the whole season up to the episode we're dealing with so we can gather together everything, which in this case meant literally the whole first season. So the first season was already the season I had watched more than any other.
Mm-hmm.
And so this just piled on. And yet I still was discovering things as I watched.
It's still my favorite season.
Or I say discovering. In some ways, discovering. In other ways, rediscovering. Because a lot of times what I would do is, ooh, that's great. And I would go back and type a note. And then I'd look at my 20-year-old article, you know, and say, to see. I'm like, oh, yeah, I took the same note.
I did that already. What was fun with the rewatch for me was my son was kind of watching it here and there because I really sat down and watched a lot of Survivor.
Mm-hmm.
And he had never watched Borneo. So he was fascinated with how different it was than the Survivor he knows and was actually really appreciating the simplicity of it and kind of the more like naturalness of it. And he actually was like, I like this better than the way Survivor is now. And I was like, you know what? That's what I say all the time. And I loved all of that about Borneo. And I know it was everything was kind of being figured out and how they were going to actually work this game. And it was new for everybody.
Right.
But it's so nice to watch it in its kind of natural state where things aren't, they don't feel like they're being forced. It was just kind of unfolding. And God damn, Jeff Probst was really involved in like everything.
He literally did a barbecue as one of the rewards. Yeah. He was the one barbecuing the meat.
He went to a bar with Kelly and like ate food and had beer and chatted. I was like, can we do that again? Like that's, I would have loved that if that had been a possible reward challenge. My goodness. Yeah. So it was so much fun. It was so much fun to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we take all the information from all of that and we add in everything else we see, such as, you know, I already mentioned my articles and thoughts from the time. And of course, as I mentioned, my rules have changed since then. And you can check out the most recent version at robhasawebsite.com/blog/survivor rules, or you can get the shorter and much more colorful version in poster form at tinyurl.com/davidrulesposter2. And there's, of course, the big version.
And I don't have the small one today. I apologize.
You don't have the small one, but people probably know what it looks like.
Yes, 11 by 17, great in a frame. It's only $20. And if you are outside of the United States, you can DM me on Twitter, which my Twitter handle is down here. And then we can make arrangements for you to get a copy.
Yeah. And of course, in addition to the poster, we also have another way to get the rules. So you can always have them with you. T-shirt form. And so just go to robhasawebsite.com or robhasapodcast.com. Click the merch link near the top. Sort the store so the new items are first. And poof.
Poof.
They will be right there. Nice. Poof. It's magic. Now, a quick reminder before we continue. Anybody who has missed our announcements, we have expanded Why Blank Lost to include the Big Brother All-Star season. So for the past couple weeks, everybody's been getting a double dose of us each week. For that podcast, we're bringing in guests each week, some of whom people will know, some as new names. This coming week, we'll feature last season's Cliff Hogg and his daughter, Kelly, who is a big RHAP fan as well.
So there'll be four of us. This is new.
There'll be four. It will be the first time we've had four people.
We're expanding.
Yes, we're just growing. We're expanding to make a reference to the Big Brother that aired Wednesday night. We're expanding as much as Christmas's Star Family.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of star babies at this point, but that's another show. Yes. So we'll talk about that. Right.
Well, but we were talking
about
Big Brother. So now normally we have several things to discuss before we get to the main topic, which in this case is Richard. But in this case, I feel like so much has been said about season one over the years. I don't know that I have anything new to say, like, oh my God, can you remember? I mean, we've already talked about several.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have anything else you wanted to talk about before we get
just there? One thing, and I know that this is something that has probably been referenced before, but one of the greatest Survivor moments ever, and I introduced it to my son tonight, he got to watch it, and my husband and I were giggling the entire time, was the immunity challenge when Rudy didn't know anything. Oh, yeah. That's truly.
I don't know.
It's so great. Like, truly.
Hold on. I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, he was like.
Yeah. You got to get right up into that camera there because that's where he was.
Didn't care. And yeah. I loved every second of it. I told Owen, I said, this is one of the funniest moments ever. You have to watch it. And he truly appreciated it. So thank you for that moment because that was great. And I just was watching it thinking somewhere that tape must exist. And I would love for us to see the entirety of it because that would be very entertaining.
Yes. But just, you know, just remember what I just did. I don't know.
I know, but it was great. So anyway, I just want to throw that out there because that is one of my favorite Survivor memories. And then to see it again, it was so much fun. So yes, love Borneo. Yeah. One of my favorites. Well, my favorite. So.
Yes. Yeah. All right. So here we go. Richard Hatch. Richard Hatch was arrogant. He was in your face, especially when he was walking around naked.
Love it.
But somehow those negative qualities didn't stop him from winning the very first season of Survivor and setting the roadmap for future players. What did he do so right that it overshadowed the negatives? How was he so much better than so many others on this initial season? Let's once again figure out why Richard won. So the first rule says to scheme and plot, and Richard Hatch is one major reason that this began as the first rule, while others who have followed in his path have ensured it remains true and always will. It's hard to figure out what to say about Rich because there's so much of what he did was related to scheming and plotting. I say it's hard to figure out, but I guarantee we're going to be on this rule for like 15 minutes. As he would discuss in Final Tribal Council, his approach was strategic from the beginning, before he even got there. Some thought the game would truly be about survival, but Richard knew better. He thought out strategies ahead of time, and he came to play a game. As I said in my original Why Rich Won article, written before I even penned the first version of the rules, he knew how to pull people together into an alliance that he directed without necessarily letting others know he was directing. He brought together three other people who probably wouldn't have teamed up otherwise and got them all to vote as a unit. Meanwhile, other players were randomly shooting their votes this way and that, depending on their whims or emotions at the time. Most of the others thought of the game as more of a lark. They voted off the people who annoyed them or people they didn't like. Rich played it like a game of chess, always moving pieces around and keeping an eye out to make sure he wasn't put in check. He needed to deceive people in order to get further? No problem. This was a game, not real life. He understood that and used it to his advantage.
Yeah, I do think it was very telling in his Final Tribal Council when he referenced the fact that he had been planning this before he even got out on the island, which I do think the approach that most of the others took was planning their survival component of it. Like, how will I survive? What type of clothes should I wear? What type of bag should I have? Because at that point in time, you were really able to make those decisions yourself. Now, CBS gets very much involved in that. But I think for Rich, it was less about any of that. And it was more about how do I survive 14 votes was what he had actually referenced. And I think it's very impressive that he started realizing before anyone really knew what to expect with this game, and ended up developing the game in a way that, I mean, has truly transfixed itself. And that's what people now do. And that's what is now expected of people to play this game. But he appeared to be the only one that walked into it saying, this is how I need to play this game, and owned it. He absolutely owned it and wasn't, you know, hiding behind it. Like, I knew I needed to do this. I didn't come out here to make friends. I didn't come out here to get to know people. I came out here to win, and I figured out how to do that. And so the fact that he was able to put all of that together before anyone had even seen how to play this game is really incredibly impressive and just shows you how well planned out every move he made while he was out there. Because if he was already planning it before he even got onto the island, then you know the entire way through he was doing the same thing. So the idea that was chess is spot.
Yeah. I mean, some of the others had thought of an alliance strategy. And we mentioned in our look at the first episode, way back at the beginning of our journey through time, that the first alliance we saw did not involve Rich, but rather Kelly, Stacy, and Sue. However, that alliance didn't hold together, while Rich was able to form one that lasted the entire game, even through some rough spots. He said that he was really shocked in the beginning by how few people were planning. His alliance ended up having so much control of the game that the tribe name Pagong became a verb, meaning the way one tribal alliance votes off another one by one without any chance of that other alliance getting out.
And I think it's interesting, too, the people that he brought into the alliance. I know you already touched upon this a bit, but he didn't pick people based upon their personalities or based upon people that he thought he was going to get along with. He actually picked people based upon who he thought he could utilize in a particular fashion. He knew that Rudy would be loyal, and so he wanted to work with Rudy. He didn't think that Sue was much of a threat because she was presenting herself as not being a threat. You know, she was presenting herself in a certain way, and he was actually looking at individuals like Gretchen and thinking, she's too smart. I don't want her around because she's going to be a threat because she's a smart woman. And so he was very aware of what qualities people had. Kelly was someone who was young, but she seemed very mature, and he thought she would understand how to work with other people. But it was so incredible to see how he chose each person for a particular reason. And it wasn't just based upon, oh, we're the first three that landed on the beach, and so now we're going to talk. It was very meticulous and very well thought out and planned out. And clearly it worked because, as you said, they really did control the entire game.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, the others that he brought in figured out, yes, this is the way to go. You know, Rudy said in episode 7, just before the merge, that 6 days earlier, he didn't like the idea of an alliance, but he's seen the light. He said, if you want to win this money, you got to get a little dirt. Later on, Sue talked about Sean, saying the reason Sean's not in the alliance is because Sean is dumb. Yeah. And then Richard felt similarly, saying Sean was ethically against any sort of alliance. And Gretchen was the same. He said it had nothing to do with ethics and morals. Quote, I don't get it. It sounds like sheer stupidity.
Yes. And I do think, too, like someone like Rudy realized early on that he actually said about Rich that he was good with his leadership skills. And if people would listen to him, they could go a long way. So Rudy was even realizing, like, as much as I don't think I like this alliance idea, this might actually help me get where I've got to go. And it was great that Rich was able to convince someone like Rudy, who initially didn't like the idea, that this is a benefit to you. It's not just a benefit to me. This is going to help us both. And then actually allowed that, you know, Rudy to get through the game as long as he did. So it really was very impressive. I mean, it's Survivor playing on many levels. And I love how they would show snippets of him speaking to each person and making each person kind of different promises, because he knew what that person wanted to hear, but he did it in a way that he wasn't condescending to anyone else. It was kind of reminding the other person, like, well, this is why Sean wouldn't work, or this is why Sue is going to be a problem, or this is why Rudy's going to be. Everyone had a different version of the final situation that was going to be with Rich at the end. And it was really great that he managed to do that and still win the money.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, on the other side, on the Pagong side, they didn't see things the same way. You know, Greg was not thrilled with the idea. At the merge, he said, if people are fear and self-preservation motivated, they'll band together. They'll form alliances. They'll start beating people out to try and get rid of the strong ones, to get rid of this and get rid of that. If that happens, I hope they'll vote me off really soon. That, to me, is really boring. And then in what was probably the rest of that statement, but aired an episode later, he said that type of game is the worst he can imagine. No, Greg, it was the best.
Yes.
Because you have to remember that it's the game.
Yes. And it's not a bunch of random people getting votes. Like, that was the thing that was shocking to me. Is the amount of times that there would be like multiple votes for multiple people.
Yeah, just
yes. All, and then there would be four votes for the same person. And people would be like, how did that happen?
Wow. Yeah, I have no
idea. And no
idea.
One could really
as a matter
figure
of fact,
it out. Colleen kept trying. Like, okay, it's happened three times now. What do you think is going on? And people are like, I don't know. If it happens again, then maybe there's an alliance.
Right. I mean, the morning after the first merged tribal council, Jenna said there seemed to be a conspiracy. and Dr. Sean said there was no good reason other than strategy to vote Gretchen off. Really? Mm. Strategy.
I know this crazy thing called strategy.
Yeah. You know, but Jenna said, I want to vote based on people's merits. I don't want to vote based on let's get rid of each of them first and then come back to our tribe. And it's like you said, the votes were all over the place. People outside the Taggi Four just voted based on who annoyed them or other vague reasons without any thought of, oh, strategy.
Yes. Or that person, they put my name down last time. I'm going to put their name down this time.
Right.
Or I'm going to follow the alphabet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and that's the thing. At the second merge vote, the former Pagong members could have mounted
100%
with their four votes against the Taggi Four, since Sean wouldn't join his tribe mates knowingly. Yeah. But then what happened was, of course, the Taggi did pick the same person as his alphabet strategy. He was like, oh, my vote won't matter. Like two tribal councils in a row. Well, I'm voting for this person, but it won't matter. And then that person got voted out. It's like, hey, dingbat. Yeah. But, you know, instead of doing that, instead of mounting the counterattack, Jervis, Greg, and Colleen all voted against their fellow Pagong member, Jenna.
Yes, which I also thought was strange because it wasn't the only time that that happened. It happened again when even though it was Sean at one point, and I know that Sean was not part of their initial tribe, but they were trying to work with him because they were thinking to themselves, maybe we can all band together and try to vote someone out. Mm-hmm. And then they're targeting Sean. And so I was kind of scratching my head, like, do they not see how this works? Like, you all have to vote the same way if you're going to band together. It was a very, and maybe it's because now that's what we expect to see. You know, that is the survivor that we expect to see. But this was, like we already talked about, new, and everyone was kind of figuring it out. But if you see that four votes are always consecutively happening, and the only way to beat four votes is to have four other votes on one person.
Right.
And they just couldn't do the math, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, in episode 10, Rich talked about how people like Sean, Jervis, and Colleen were starting to strategize, and he found it very funny that they thought there was room to do that by then.
Yeah.
Now, today, if we got to a Survivor season today, and that was happening, there would still be room to do it because, you know, things nowadays rarely remain as stable as they were in the Taggi Alliance, but certainly not back then. It was already locked down.
And it was fun to watch them debating as whether or not they should form an alliance. Like, I'm thinking about it. Like, we've been talking and we might do this. But then they're also... Yeah.
As they're getting picked off one by one.
Right, and they're making T-shirts that say Target on it and sitting duck. I mean, I appreciate it because it was quite cute. But at the same time, it was like, come on, like, you guys can do this. But I know that you're not going to because I've already seen the season. But, you know, it was... Yeah. It was a very impressive thing to observe, and it's been incredible to see how it's developed over time. And I do think that CBS really should be very thankful for someone like Richard Hatch coming along, because I do believe he has provided the rules are basically created because of Richard, and people's gameplay reflects Richard Hatch in the way that they now play Survivor.
Yeah. Now, as opposed to Richard, we had Kelly. And as time went on, she decided she didn't like being in an alliance, saying the whole alliance thing was no fun because it was just leading lambs to the slaughter. Well, yeah, it was. That's the point. You know, Rudy understood it, saying in the finale, the four of us that are here right now, we formed this alliance way in the beginning. We were in the position of power where we could get rid of anybody we wanted to. We had them lined up. But Kelly didn't like that, at least not later. She was fully on board until she wasn't. And then she revised the storyline to tell us, and apparently herself, that she never wanted to be in the alliance. But the problem was then she burned her bridges with her alliance when she could have continued to vote with them instead of on her own, she could have kept up the friendly interaction with Sue and done all the other things that got her into the alliance. And honestly, if she had done that, she might have come out as the winner.
Yeah, and I think that that's what Kelly struggled with the most, was kind of the excuses at the end. I felt like her final tribal council was full of a lot of very defensive responses and trying to justify and explain what she had done in a way that was not owning it. She wasn't saying, well, I did this because. She was really just kind of making excuses why, well, I had to do this because I wasn't going to go along with this anymore. And it was a much different approach by Rich, where Rich was owning everything he did. 100% yeah, owning.
Not too much. We got Appendix B still to get.
But I think
we almost never get to Appendix B normally, so we tend to forget about it.
But I say this because I feel like that was representative of her gameplay as well, where there was a lot of someone called her wishy-washy, and I do appreciate what right. Kelly was trying to do, but unfortunately it was making her look as if she wasn't in control, whereas Rich always looked like he was in control and what right. he wanted to have happen happened. He actually said in one of the episodes, they're not voting me out because I'm not letting them. And I think that that's very right. telling, whereas Kelly was like, well, I'm just going to vote the way I want to vote, and maybe they're going to target me. But she wasn't in control like Rich was. And I think that that was a right. very big difference between their two games.
Yeah. Now, the second rule says not to scheme and plot too much and to keep your scheming secret. I don't really have much to say about Rich here. He and the rest of the Taggi Alliance did keep their scheming secret until there was nothing the remaining Pagong could do about it. I mean, even lying directly to Jeff, which... everyone was like, oh my God, I can't believe they lied to Jeff.
That was so awesome.
yeah. And whatever people may think about him, Richard did not actually backstab people or double deal. Mm-hmm. You know, the people he was aligned with, he went to the end with.
Mm-hmm. He had different versions now, for those people.
Right.
But yes, he did not backstab anyone. Yeah. And he was smart enough to know when something wasn't going to work for him. He then made it someone else's problem. Like, yeah. I loved that it was like the whole final. Can I talk about this now? The final immunity challenge.
I don't think so. No.
All right. I'll wait.
Now, as far as rule two, you know, Kelly was a different story. She got in over her head by telling too many stories to too many different people. She had the solid Taggi alliance. Within that, she had an even tighter alliance and friendship in the making with Sue. But outside of that, she kept wavering on whether she really wanted to be in the alliance. And she told us directly that she didn't. She hung out with some of the Pagong players, apparently in order to make herself look better and possibly abandon the alliance. But then in the finale, she admitted to us that she didn't want to be in the alliance anymore, but was too chicken to bail. So she tried to play both sides.
And then she tried to say that she was telling her original Alliance members that she was only pretending to be friends with the Pagong mm-hmm. members because she wanted them to feel comfortable and not like they were being targeted. But at that point, I think the jig was up. You know, everybody kind of knew what she yeah. was doing, and they were very aware of it. And again, so there was no ownership for her. And it's one of those situations where I think it's interesting that she was very confrontational with Sue, and Sue was very honest in the approach that she was going to take mm-hmm. with Kelly, and that Kelly was not going to be in the final three. And I feel like Kelly should have reciprocated and said, okay, well, this is what I'm going to do then, just so you know where I stand. Because again, she wasn't coming across as being in control of her game. It was like she was letting someone else take control for her. And I just, that was a hard thing to watch. And I know that she was struggling a lot morally, ethically, because she was starting to think that this wasn't nice and what we were doing mm-hmm. to people. But it was putting her in a very difficult spot because she was trying to play both sides and it just wasn't coming across well with anyone that was watching.
Yeah. Now, the interesting thing is that if she hadn't done that, she had this thing with Sue where they planned to mm-hmm. turn out Rich at the end. And Rich admitted that he had no idea that they had this sub-alliance. If Kelly hadn't blown up her relationship with Sue, they could have followed their plan And much like I said in the first rule, I think it's pretty likely that Kelly would have beaten Sue in the end if she would have just stuck with her plan.
I don't disagree with that at all.
So moving to the third rule, which talks about being flexible. Although we've talked about how Rich came into the game with his plans, he actually changed them a couple of times when he saw things weren't working well. In the first days, he saw that his attempt to tell people what to do sitting on top of a log wasn't working, so he adapted. In the third episode, he said he wanted to vote according to how people could most help the tribe in challenges, and he also said he tried to have an open discussion about who they should vote out, but that didn't fly at all. So he abandoned, again, both those ideas and moved on. And, you know, as an aside, future players should have taken the hint that if even Richard Hatch couldn't pull off the whole let's get the tribe together and have an open discussion thing, nobody should have ever tried that again.
And it's interesting. That was just kind of like a little snippet. Like they threw in there real quick. They didn't spend much. It's not like they showed him trying to do it. He just mentioned it, that he tried and it didn't work. But this goes back to his ability to understand what is happening around him. And he was very willing to change certain components of his game when he saw that it wasn't working. Whereas I think a lot of the people he was playing the game with kind of locked themselves into, well, this is how I think we're supposed to play it. This is what I'm going to do because I feel like this is the right way to be morally or ethically. There seemed to be a lot of that happening where people were struggling with this idea of anything being cutthroat and this, we're not supposed to just be splashing around in the mud and having a good time. This is actually a game. And it took a lot of people, I think, a long time to realize it was a game and then go, well, this isn't fun anymore because now we're just being mean to each other and we're having to do mean things to each other. Right. Whereas Rich had already like crossed that bridge before the game even started and was willing to do it.
He built the bridge. Did. He crossed it. He burned it.
He rebuilt it. Yes. So for him, I do think that walking into the game with that mentality already put him in a better place because he didn't have to struggle with any of it. He had already resigned himself to the fact that I will have to backstab. I will have to make moves in order to win because this is a game, period. I'm not here to make relationships and have fun. I am here to win $1 million. And regardless of what he had to do, he was going to do it. And I think that that probably elevated his ability to adjust on the fly because he wasn't struggling with the emotional component of it.
Right. Now, we can't exactly say that Kelly was flexible because she always wanted to do things her way, as we've been discussing a little bit. First, she wanted to be in the alliance and then she didn't. If it had been the opposite order, I would have said, yes, she was flexible enough to say she needed to be in an alliance, but she went the wrong direction from good gameplay to bad. And I'm not going to reward that by saying it was flexible.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah. So the fourth rule tells players not to let their emotions control them. Continuing with Kelly from the last rule, it's funny that now you mentioned already that Rich, you know, was not there to make friends, but actually Kelly was the first person to say that on
air. That's true.
And she said it multiple times. I'm not here to make friends. And I think that that probably means she was the first person in all of reality television, because now it's a cliche. I mean, literally, you had to have at least one person on every show who would look at the camera and go, I'm not here to make friends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, and so I'm, as far as I know, she was the first one to ever say that.
Yeah.
But that all changed for her. You know, despite the fact that she was the first to form an alliance and was really into it, by the eighth episode, she said she was starting to feel bad, like she was a backstabber. She wondered how you can stay true to yourself and maintain your integrity while playing this game. And she concluded you can't. And she kept telling herself she didn't come to make friends, but she did make friends. And that was part of her problem that we've already discussed.
She was kind of like a walking paradox about a lot of things. It was like she wanted to do certain things, and then when she found out that wasn't working, then she would do something different, which is not bad per se, but the choices that were following up didn't necessarily make sense. And so, you know, just to jump back as far as like the alliance, not wanting to be in the alliance anymore, she had an opportunity to shift and play with other people, but didn't make that decision either. And, you know, so, and I do think that her inability to separate, you know, friends versus game versus how do I want to win this game? She was in the perfect group she needed to be in order to win that game. I mean, if you want to beat someone, that's the group, except maybe Rudy, but that's who you want to be playing with. And not the people like Colleen or Greg who are very, you know, into the whole, you know, Jenna, they want to be friends. That was important to a lot of the people on the jury. And, you know, and that would have likely had been where she could have ended up if she had shifted, but she didn't even shift that direction either. So it was like she really didn't have a place to then land. And so I think that though she desired to not make friends, she couldn't help but make friends. And then it affected her negatively.
Right. Yeah. And then, you know, we have Rich, on the other hand, who didn't have these issues at all. As I said in my original Why Richard Won article, he was utterly ruthless, voting without emotional attachments, caring only about his
strategy. Yes, 100%.
Now we're going to take a quick break for our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Grand Canyon University's RN to BSN online degree program makes earning your bachelor's in nursing possible. Balance online coursework with local in-person clinicals to position yourself for potential leadership opportunities in the time you have from wherever you are, leaving room for what matters. Achieve your goals with your personalized plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
We're back, so let's get back to the show.
So we can move to the fifth rule, which talks about the social game and reminds players to pretend to be nice. When I first wrote these rules, this one didn't have as much impact as some of the others. And it was only pretty much about pretending to be nice. As the years went by, and especially after the two Russell Hantz failures, it became very obvious that running roughshod over the opposition was not going to be tolerated by juries in most cases. The fact that most of these rules were based greatly on Richard Hatch should be a hint as to how he did here, in that it wasn't that important in his game. But even saying that, he did start out well-liked. When Kelly was guiding Jenna to the Taggi camp before the, quote, merger summit, she said, Rich is a sweetheart, so easygoing. But once the tribes merged, or mergered, the Pagong folks started to dislike Rich's cockiness and what they described as overconfidence. Now, overconfident. Considering that this is the Why Richard Won podcast, I'm going to have to steal a line from a doctor I follow on Twitter and say he was not overconfident. He was appropriately confident. Still, he was seen as arrogant, thinking he had everything in the bag.
Yeah, but I think what was interesting about Richard is that while there were parts of his personality that might have come across as harsh or too confident, I think that there were other parts of him that allowed him to still be liked by people that he was playing the game with. He was very good at deciding what was going to work with each person. They showed him playing cards a lot with Jervis, and they showed him having a lot of conversations with people. He and Rudy developed a very strong bond, even though Rudy was like,
but not in a
homosexual way. Right. It was,
that's
you know,
sure.
And it was, and it's funny to hear Rudy say, when this game is done, I'm never going to see this guy again. But he was just, but he was so good at determining what each person kind of needed and what was going to work with them. He knew feeding them was going to just fill them with joy. And so he was very aware of how significant fishing was and was doing it in even a strategic way. He decided, I'm only going to get a couple of fish until we vote like two more people off, and then I'll go fish a lot. So he was even thinking about how much fish he should bring in order to make people comfortable just enough to look to him and say, okay, well, we want, you know, we want Rich around because he's feeding us, because he realized it was important. So even though he might have come across as a little arrogant at times, he still gave people a good reason to like him because of what he was providing for each person individually.
Yeah. And, you know, there did used to be a rule that I've mentioned this in some of our other podcasts, that providing food wins allies. That used to be one of the rules. because that was one of the main things he did. But even Rich said in one episode that while he talked up his fishing game and said that was why nobody was voting him out, it was actually not the reason. And this goes back to something you quoted him earlier in this exact line. The reason was that he was not letting them vote him out. And he knew that providing food to the tribe would make his position even more secure. And he incorporated that into his social game. So, you know, while that specific rule dropped out, it's still part of the
social. Yeah, absolutely.
But there were still problems because he allowed himself to get angry. He threw occasional tantrums. Mm-hmm. As one example, a few episodes ago, he was mad that Rudy burned the fish. Now, I'd have been mad, too. I'd have been super pissed off. But he should have kept it inside or vented only to the cameras when no one else was around to see. Instead, he had a hissy fit. And I feel like he thought that he was able to make this public display because he thought he was secure, or he knew he was secure. You know, even Sue mentioned in her speech before the jury vote, noting that he was unable to admit his errors without whining.
Yeah. And I think that that comes from feeling like you are in a place of comfort. If he does think that, well, I know that I've got three people with me, does it really matter if I complain about the burnt fish? Because I'm going to be the one going out to get more fish anyway. And I know that I've got three people on my side. So are they really going to get that upset if I say very much about the fish? And I also think what worked in his favor here is, even though people might not have liked him very much for various reasons, and early on, I mean, he got a couple of votes, the first tribal council, because he was rubbing people the wrong way. But I do think that he adjusted, but he also was playing a game with a lot of people that were choosing odd reasons to vote people out. And so the mere fact that they might not necessarily like someone that much could have been a reason to vote about this week, but next week it might not, or the next few days it might not, because this person over here might be doing something that's annoying to me. And so it's not like what we see now, where I feel like there's a lot of groupthink. When one person is being annoying, everybody starts talking about it, and then everyone's like, well, let's just vote him out.
And then they all pile on, and of course, everything that person does is even worse than the
next. And I feel like that wasn't happening. Like, people would be like, oh, well, that was annoying. But they didn't come together. And I think Rich probably was very aware that these people aren't coming together for anything. So they're probably, if one of them is annoyed with me, they're not going to run off in a group and talk about me and decide I need to be voted out because of it. Because everyone was kind of like doing their own thing except Rich and his group.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I mean, he did annoy people in other ways, like the whole walking around naked. You know, he didn't see any harm in it, but others weren't so comfortable and he made them ill at ease. I don't know why you would do something that's sure to annoy others when you're going to be counting on their votes later. At the reunion show, he said he put on clothes as soon as he realized it was a problem. Maybe, but he milked it way too long before.
He wanted to spend his 39th birthday naked.
Yeah, but it wasn't just his 39th birthday. It was a long birthday.
It was like a birthday week.
Yeah.
Well, it might have worked because I think it helped him get, like, Sean thought it was hysterical. So it was part of the reason why Sean voted for him. So, you know, I mean, there's some positives there, too.
Yeah. Now, Kelly undoubtedly played a better social game than Rich, as she demonstrated in the Final Four Immunity Challenge. And then Rich admitted at the beginning of the final immunity challenge that he didn't even know Rudy's wife. You know, that was the whole point, kind of Kelly hanging out with the members of Pagong, who were also more along her own age group. But it just became too emotional for her, as we already discussed. She and Sue got so close that Sue at one point was crying about how Kelly would be her new best friend, and she trusted Kelly 100%. And you know, when Kelly turned on her, love turned to hate, making Sue the swing vote against
her. That was a whole, like, lot to take in. I mean, Sue is not someone that you necessarily anticipate is going to become so close to someone, so close that she would then cry and become emotional. And I think that really affected Sue's game as it moved on, you know, because she thought that Kelly had turned on her. And so, you know, that clearly there was a bond there that I think seeped into a much more personal space than just the game. And I think Kelly was feeling that as well. And even Rich commented on it. He's like, I don't know how these two who were hating on each other just 2 days ago are now like buddying up again and washing each other off and picking at each other and really just getting along again. Like, to Richard, it didn't make any sense. But to someone like Kelly, she was able to move past it. And I don't even know how she did, because honestly, I mean, that was aggressive. A lot of it was very aggressive.
Yeah, it was boom, boom, boom. You know, they just kept doing it. But in between, they'd be fine.
But she clearly took the time to get to know people, had conversations with people, and had conversations because she cared about people. It wasn't, I mean, how many times did we hear Richard say, and Rudy too, which I thought was hysterical, like, I don't really care about these people. I don't really care to know these people. Yeah. And yeah, they were very honest, at least to the cameras, that they had no interest in actually getting to know these people. Whereas Kelly, that it really became part of her everyday existence out there was to get to know people.
Right, right. All right. The sixth rule warns against being too much of a threat. And while Kelly certainly became the most threatening person out there due to her attitude change and also her challenge abilities, those same challenge abilities kept her out of harm's way because she won immunity over again.
Yes. She was a challenge beast. It was incredible. It was really impressive.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Now, Richard managed to continually avoid being seen as a threat, at least by any sort of majority. Several of the Pagong tried to get rid of him, but, you know, we mentioned before, it was too little too late. By the time they recognized the threat that he truly represented, he had already disarmed them. And in large part due to the way he was acting, as we just discussed in the fifth rule, the others didn't see him as a real threat to win.
Yeah.
I mean, even some of those faults reduced his threat level, because let's say he had been a likable guy, Kelly might not have kept him and taken him to the end. She might have taken Rudy. But because she thought she could beat Richard in a jury vote, she stuck with him, which, you know, it was a good choice for her, but obviously a better one for him.
Yeah, and I do think that there was someone, and I don't remember who said it, but there was someone who, it might have been Rudy, who was talking about the fact that he didn't think that Richard would even get any votes. Like, there was a possibility that he wouldn't get any votes at the end. So there must have been some type of idea circulating amongst the camp that, well, we don't like him enough to give him $1 million. Like, he's bothered us enough. And I do think that the group of people that were actually making the decision, as we've already talked about, was a group of people that seemed to be making decisions for very weird reasons. You know, why they were voting people out. Why Kelly got some votes was based upon some obscure reasons by some of the people that put forth their reasons for their vote. And not that she wasn't deserving, but I still think that at that point, people were realizing what had happened. And like, one thing that we seemed to hear a lot was the realization that there was money involved here. But I think initially when the game started,
what, the big treasure chest?
I know,
of
like
cash
that didn't remind people every day. But it was interesting because I feel like it was almost like people had been like, oh, wait, someone's going to win $1 million. Like, that's a big deal. And it was like they all of a sudden started to realize it. And then they started kind of looking at, well, who is. And I do think that it could have come down to more of a likability contest. And I think that Kelly was probably hoping that that's what was going to transpire. And thinking that because of that and who's on the jury, and I know that these people like me and I know that I've took an opportunity to get to know them, that they'll vote for me because they like me, not because of, and she said that to the better person should win. And so I think that she was hoping that it would.
We'll get there. We're not there yet.
But I want to talk about that. So anyway, moving on. You and your damn rules, I'm telling you. So much.
Stop. All right. Well, the seventh rule we can quickly go skip by because it deals with idols and advantages. And obviously,
that was so nice.
Yeah. Yeah. it was weird. I have to say this, since it's our last one, it is weird to see these older seasons where people can wander off alone and not immediately have the whole tribe going, they're looking for idols. They're a threat. You know, no, they just wandered off alone.
Yeah, it was nice. I mean, they could wander off into the woods, cover themselves in mud, and then come back and be like, I was playing in the mud. Nice.
I was talking on my coconut phone. What the hell?
Coconut phone. Yeah. And the conch. Come on.
Yes. For one, they tried that for one tribal council.
It was hysterical. I was dying. I'm like, I forgot about the conch. Anyway.
Yeah. With good reason. Now we're almost to Appendix B, but we got to go through Appendix A first.
Oh, okay.
I know. And Appendix A is about the rest of the tribe keeping their end goals in mind when voting, and says to vote out the weak, then the strong, then the weak, then the strong. And the Tagi Alliance generally followed this. You know, Jenna said when they merged, strategies had to shift, and the Tagi Alliance voted off leaders. In other words, they were voting off the strong. And then they took out the weak, unaligned players. And then Kelly took out the person she believed to be the biggest threat, the strongest threat.
Yeah, and I do think that they were following a certain strategy, but I think that a lot of that was coming from Rich. And so, you know, it was kind of a learned thing as the season progressed, because their reasons for voting some people out at various times, as we've already discussed, didn't make any sense.
No, no. All right. Now we're at Appendix B. it covers the jury phase and the final tribal council. Now, as you know, we've been discussing the whole time, Kelly tried to get in good with the jurors before they were voted out, which was a good plan. Unfortunately for her, some people recognized exactly what she was doing, which caused problems. But overall, I still think it was a plus for her. And then she said in her opening speech that she hoped they wouldn't judge her on how they played the game, how she played the game, but how she interacted with people. And yeah, of course, that's what she wanted, because between the two finalists, we already talked about, she clearly owned the social.
Yeah, party. But I do think that this worked to her detriment, even though it did help her get some votes. If someone feels like they have a personal connection with you, and then you end up coming across as not being genuine, then they might start questioning their relationship with you entirely and say, well, if you weren't genuine to this person, were you being disingenuous to me, and did my relationship with you actually matter, or were you only trying to learn things about me because you were hoping that it was going to get you farther in the game as opposed to caring about me as a person? And so when you have that group of people who appear to be a little more sensitive to that issue being on the jury, I feel like that's when it worked against her, whereas someone like Rich was very honest and forthcoming about the fact that basically, I don't care about any of you. I don't. I care about this game. I care about winning the money. And he was completely open about that component of him. And I think that that actually gave him a little more like stock, because they thought, well, oh, so he really was playing the game. And that's what he was reminding them. This should be about the game and who played the better game.
Right.
Not who you like more and who's the better person. You might not like me, but this is the game I played. This is what I came in to do. I wouldn't change any of it. And I did everything I wanted. So I think he was definitely elevated in that moment, because he was showing the jury, my game became Kelly's game. And she followed along with me until all of a sudden she didn't like it anymore. And then it all blew up in her face. So as far as who played the better game, I clearly did. And she was trying to play my game with me, and it didn't work out for her, but it worked out for me.
Yeah, and that's what he did. He emphasized it in his closing words that he did what he thought he needed to do to play the game. You know, throughout, he stayed calm. He explained his strategy. He didn't apologize. He didn't claim that didn't mean to lie to people or any of those many other excuses we've seen in other final tribal councils since then. He simply told them, I'm the best strategist and I deserve to win. And, you know, even before they went to that final tribal council, Kelly noted that Rich never pretended he wasn't in it to win, or they wasn't scheming and conniving. He'd always been playing the game and never acted like he wasn't. And so, it's about who played the game better. But then you get to some of the votes. And some of them were just a bit odd. And I don't know if these were the ones that you were referring to before, because in response to Jervis's question, Kelly said one thing she'd change was to not join the Alliance. The thing is, without that Alliance, she wouldn't have been there in the 5-2. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest. But what made it really strange was that Jervis gave Kelly his vote because in his mind, she played the game better by staying under the radar and playing both sides. Mm. So this strikes me as the height of irony because Kelly was trying to distance herself from that part of gaming. So, but then Jervis voted for her for being the better gamer. It made no sense.
But I also got the distinct impression that he was very, very upset with Sue's representation of Kelly. And I think that that might have backfired for Sue in her plea to the jury as to, you know, the snake versus the rat and, you know, all that, that good stuff.
Yes.
Which is awesome, by the way. But I don't think it sat well with Jervis. And so I think for him, voting for Kelly might have been a direct response to that's not okay. And again, that goes back to the reason for people making their decisions was not necessarily always based on the best thing. And so that might have been a knee-jerk reaction for him at the time. And I don't know if that's what ended up happening, but because he seemed to have a good relationship with Rich to a certain extent, but he also was one of the more vocal people about Rich, but at least on camera, and about how he was a little snaky and didn't really appreciate what he was doing. So, you know, I don't think that he wouldn't have voted for Kelly, but I think that that might have kind of pushed him over the edge a little bit as far as not wanting to vote for Rich because of Sue.
Yeah. And I mean, there. Yeah. So you have Jervis claiming that this was why he voted, you know, that she was the better gamer. Sue calling Kelly very two-faced and manipulative. And then Sean voting for Rich because Kelly was too deceptive. And so you have these differing opinions of things.
Yeah.
Now, I do think we have to address Greg's pick a number question.
Love it.
I have always maintained, I always will maintain, that he was just being Greg. And he already had his mind made up that he was voting for Rich. So he wanted to be funny. Even way back. So this was one of those times where I said I wrote down a bunch of stuff and then looked back at my original thing from 20 years ago and went, oh, I said the exact same things. You know, in my original Why Richard Won article, I said, we'll probably never know the real reason Greg voted for Richard. The pick a number bit was almost certainly bogus. But considering Greg's personality, it's probably safe to say that he voted for Richard because he respected his intelligence and abilities. I still stand by that.
And here I had an interesting moment when I did my rewatch. And I think it's because it's based upon a lot of the things that we've discussed. When Rich was asked by Jenna, what two people would you replace in these seats? Who would you put here? And his response was very well thought out because he put two people who were on the jury in those seats, including Greg, and complimented Greg and Greg's ability to play the game and how he wanted to understand Greg more, that he saw Greg as a great potential player, but didn't have an opportunity to play with him. And I do think that that was just stroking some egos, that he looked at that jury and said, who do I think I could get to pull over to my side? I'm going to toss a bone over here and I'm going to talk about Greg. And I do think that there is some belief to that, that Greg wanted to make it appear as if it was not necessarily voting for him because he wanted to. I was going to turn it into this pick a number. He also sniffed the marker before he cast his vote, which is hysterical, but still very funny. And I don't know if it was just a plan all along. I'm going to vote for Rich and make it look like it's just a comical joke. But what a mean thing to do to Kelly. I mean, really. Like, if that's what you did.
Yeah.
That's kind of a mean thing to do. That's a really mean
thing
to do.
But here's the thing. If it had been a real question, Kelly screwed
up. Oh, she did.
Because after Rich picked seven, Kelly. Yes, exactly. She had a much better chance of being closer if she had done so. Now, you know, Greg later said on the reunion show, I think the number was nine, according to him. But, it doesn't matter. You got to go with the odds, and you don't pick three. Why the hell would you pick
and
three?
Here's the other thing. Even Rich screwed up because you pick five. You start with five. You're like, I'll pick five because five's dead in the middle. So then we're, you know, so she's got to go up or down. And so, you know, so her chances are going to be limited. So, but yeah, she definitely should have picked six. That's just, you pick six at that point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Showcase showdown.
So on that note. Yes. Right. Exactly. On that note, I think it's about time to wrap things up. You wanted to talk about the final immunity.
Oh, yes. I did want to mention this because I think it's this again shows the multiple levels of Richard Hatch's thought process with this game. He knew when he was standing on that final, which I love this final immunity challenge. I wish Survivor would do it more. It is the best. I know Australian Survivor does it like all the time. It is so great. Richard knew that Rudy was probably not going to win, but that Kelly had a really good chance of winning. And in order for him to be sitting in that final two, he needed to step out. Like he couldn't stay up there because he had promised Rudy that he would take Rudy to the end. And Rudy was incredibly loyal. And so if Rudy fell out and it was down to just Kelly and Rich, and if Rich ended up winning, boy, he had to take Rudy to the final two. He couldn't take Kelly. He was stuck. And so in order to keep Rudy's vote, he stepped down because he was like, well, I knew I couldn't do it. But he was doing it because he didn't want to lose Rudy's vote in the end. And he also knew that Rudy couldn't beat Kelly. And so he was going to be in the final two because Kelly would pick Rich. She wouldn't pick Rudy. And then he would be in the final two. Like, this is how structured his thought process was out there, which I think is incredible because most people, I think, in that moment would be like, I have to win this. Like, I have to win this. Instead, he worked through the problem and came up with a solution and said, no, I'm done. I can't do this. I'm going to sit down. And Rudy was so angry, but still stuck to his loyalty and gave him his vote. Right. So I just thought that was fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. And even if Rudy had won, if Kelly had slipped or something, Rudy was always
for
taking him to the
100%. Point. So it was the best move for him to make because it didn't cause any rift between he and Rudy. So he was either going to be in the final two with Rudy, or he was going to get Rudy's vote if he was in the final two with Kelly.
Yeah, the only thing I would have done differently there, pretend to fall.
Yes.
Don't stand there and pontificate about why you're doing this as your strategy.
Yeah, pretend to fall.
Because then you make Rudy mad. You know, slip, fall, do something. Don't just say, oh, well, here's the reason I'm doing it. Right. Bye-bye.
No, and I agree with that. It would have been much better to just act as if you fell, and then that way you're not making such a show of it that then they can revisit and think about and talk about, for sure.
Right. All right, with that, it's about time to wrap things up. So what are your final thoughts?
Thank you for giving us Borneo. I loved Borneo so much. This was incredible. And the fact that they discovered Richard Hatch, however he was found, I'm eternally grateful. Kelly also, I'm eternally grateful to her too, because they really did create what we now know Survivor to be. And I think everything that came together on this season was so incredible. It really set the stage for all of these seasons to come. And Richard Hatch is the first winning Survivor, which you couldn't have asked for a better winner, and you couldn't have asked for a better person to put in motion everything that we have seen since. He clearly out-strategized everyone. He clearly walked into that game having a plan, knowing what he wanted to do and knowing how he wanted to do it, and made it all work. He got together three other people that he knew were going to work well with him for whatever reason. There was very particular reasons he chose those people, and created an alliance, which is now what everybody does on Survivor. And he was playing with people that were about 10 spaces behind him. You know, it was kind of like when you play a game, like a board game, and you get to move ahead 10 spaces. That's where he started. He started 10 spaces in front of everybody and just wiped the floor with all of them. And as much as I remember the moment when Richard Hatch won, which is weird, by the way, that they announced the $1 million winner in front of nobody except the people who were present on the island. I know, it was hysterical. But I mean, that's kind of like the scream heard around the world. I think so many people screamed when Richard Hatch won because he was Richard Hatch. He was kind of the villain of the season, the one that everybody looked at and said, oh my gosh, who is this guy? But he was the guy who made Survivor what it was. So as far as Richard Hatch winning, I'm glad that he did because it has created what we now see. And Kelly, I'm sorry that you didn't pick 6. I'm sorry you didn't pick 9 if that was supposed to be the number. That, unfortunately, could have been the reason why you lost. But I don't think it was. I do think that Kelly struggled greatly with her inability to separate herself from the game like Richard was. Richard knew it was about the game. It wasn't about relationships. And he had a very clear path and a very clear structure in how he wanted to get there. Kelly, unfortunately, tried but got mixed up along the way, and she got lost in wanting to be a friend versus wanting to be a foe and wanting to play the game but not wanting to play the game, and she struggled a lot. So unfortunately, Kelly put herself in a very bad position when she was in an incredible position to win the game, but that was all by choice.
Yeah, you mentioned, you know, people screamed because Richard was the villain, and during the reunion special, CBS did a scientific survey, and I know it was scientific because host Bryant Gumbel repeated the word scientific many times. Only 31% of people said the right player won. Let me tell you, the rest of the people polled, they were the ones who were wrong. Richard Hatch was plotting out his strategy before the game even began. Others came in expecting it to be a test of survival skills, but he recognized it for what it truly was. Others thought they should vote according to their hearts, but he knew to use his head. In the book Survivor 2, The Field Guide, the first chapter dealt with the final days in Borneo, which is odd. You think it's Survivor 2 and, you know, that this was the Survivor 1 book, but no, this book had it as the first chapter also. One interesting story from the book leaped out to me as I reread it. On day 20, Rich had, quote, stood off camera and told Probst exactly which individuals would be voted off all the way to the show's end and in the proper order. He had not been wrong once. Compared with Rich's master strategizing, the rest of the contestants were passive participants. And indeed, many of them were. Kelly wasn't, though. She was part of the very first alliance in Survivor and joined into the Katagi Core Alliance. She had everything right until she blew up her own spot by getting emotional. As I said in my original Why Kelly Lost article, if she had only kept her eyes on the prize, not worried about whether it was ethical to form an alliance, but whether she would win, she could have gotten the big money. But she blew her chances when she forgot that the aim of this contest was to win, not to worry about making new friends. She compounded this later by saying it was wrong to have been in the alliance, that she should have stayed out of the very alliance that got her to second place. Even after playing the game for 39 days, she still didn't really understand it. Truly, the only thing that kept her around to the finals was her ability to win immunity challenges, but that wasn't enough to take home the big check. Kelly got to the end by winning 5 immunities in a row. Rich got to the end through strategy. Rich played with one goal, always moving forward. Kelly played a better social game, but she wavered back and forth, appearing to play both sides while constantly looking backwards. In my reality TV Hall of Fame induction for Rich, I talked about how he was the best strategist, and I said, in the end, of course, the jury agreed. They supported the idea that Survivor is about strategy, not about being nice. Sure, challenges are important, as Kelly showed, but they did not prove you to be worthy of winning the overall game. That prize was given to the player with the best skills in dealing with people and manipulating them to do what he wanted them to do while they didn't even realize they were being used as pawns. I also said in the induction that Richard Hatch taught everyone the true meaning of the Survivor catchphrase, outwit, outplay, outlast, and noted that his strategy would be used as a roadmap for years to come. Of course, it was.
That's right.
Suhawk's final tribal council speech is, of course, memorable. Among other things, she said, "This island is pretty much full of only two things, snakes and rats. And in the end of Mother Nature, we have Richard the snake, who knowingly went after prey, and Kelly the rat, who ran around like the rats do on this island, trying to run from the snake. I feel we owe it to the island spirits that we have come to know to let it be in the end the way Mother Nature intended it to be, to let the rat eat the snake." Of course.
I was curious about your t-shirt. I couldn't tell.
The thing is, I don't know that I'd even call Richard a snake. Because that implies a backstabbing nature. Rich was simply the best strategist in the season. He created a plan. He modified the plan as necessary. He enacted the plan without emotion. Others had a chance to get rid of him, but every attempt failed because they were not willing or able to do what needed to be done. He was, and he did. And that is why Richard.
Excellent. I like it.
All right. Well, with that, let me remind everyone that the rules we just discussed are now available in both poster and, there it is, t-shirt form. Go to robhasawebsite.com or robhasapodcast.com for the shirt. Click on the merch link. Sort to see the newer items first. For the poster, go to tinyurl.com/DavidRulesPoster.
Yes, too. And I already mentioned, DM me if you're outside of the United States. We'll yes. get to you.
I want to encourage people to check out the RHAP patron program at robhasawebsite.com/patron. We always talk about all the call-in shows and everything else. So you already know about all of that, but it really is a great benefit. You know, Rob can just talk to people for hours and hours. And of course, there are the Facebook groups with a great community of people where you can talk about Survivor, Big Brother, life in general. So remember to go to robhasawebsite.com/patron. And once you get to the Facebook groups, make sure to say hello to us.
You can also say hello to us on Twitter. So if I'm going to, this one, I always do it wrong. There we are. There's my Twitter handle at JessicaLewis89. He is at David Bloomberg. You should follow us both because you will get both sides of the story. And we post throughout the week. Obviously, Survivor will not be playing in the fall, which is very, very sad. But we are doing a Big Brother podcast. So we have been tweeting quite a bit about Big Brother. So you should definitely follow us both so you can hear what our thoughts are through the week and the multiple episodes that we get to see of Big Brother. And also other randoms that we like to tweet about during the week as well. So I'm at JessicaLewis89, at David Bloomberg. This way, over here.
All right. Well, we need a hashtag. Normally, for when we get to the one, we just do why that person won. So we could do why Richard.
Sure, we could do that.
Okay, there we go. And then, of course, there's the hashtag for this podcast overall: why X lost. You just mentioned, we are doing Big Brother, and as I noted before, this weekend we'll be joined by last season's Cliff Hogg and his daughter. And but then, make it a regular appointment every weekend until late October. Everyone should, watch us.
Definitely.
Or listen to us.
And we can take a bit of a breather.
Yeah, well, it's weird that we say it's a bit of a breather for Big Brother when most people are like, oh my gosh, there's so much
yes,
going on.
No, now that this is finishing up,
yes,
it's a breather. For sure.
Yeah. Now everybody should also make sure you're subscribed to all of the RHAP Survivor podcasts for when that comes back at robhasapodcast.com/survivor, or, subscribe to the reality TV Rehap Ups feed where we're on both feeds and a lot of the Big Brother stuff is on the Rehap Ups feed, among other things. One new show to watch for on the Rehap Ups is worldwide sensation Love Island is back for season 2 in the U.S. And apparently this unique dating show gives you the power to vote for your favorites all season long. The show airs on CBS started this past Monday. And the show can be seen every night of the week except Wednesdays. So it's on more than Big
Listen.
Brother, apparently. Kirsten McInnes and Brian Scali, they're both great. Kirsten has it in for me in Mafia because one time I killed her in the game. But other than that, Well, I mean, she's killed me multiple times since then. But they will have coverage every Wednesday and Saturday with recaps that take the show even less seriously than it takes itself.
Because that, if you haven't seen it, you should watch it and pay attention to what is transpiring.
Pay attention to what, Jessica?
Well, sometimes the discussions that are being had amongst the people on Love Island are interesting. Yeah, check it out. Check it out. It's like a train wreck. You can't look away. All right, what's next?
What's
next? Are
we done?
Can I say thank you now?
All right.
I always forget where we get to at that point. People are probably like, really, Jessica? Like, we know what you're supposed to do next. So thank you to Scott St. Pierre for all of the editing that he does on both the audio and video version of Why Blank Lost. We appreciate all of his hard work, so thank you so much, Scott. And also thank you to Will from America for the incredible theme song that he has created for this podcast, which you can hear on the audio version. You will miss out on the video version, but then you get the added bonus of seeing us. So it's entirely up to you. If you want to hear the song, see our faces, do both, whatever you like. But thank you both to Scott St. Pierre and Will from America for the incredible work that you do for us. Thanks.
Yes, and a special thanks to you, Jessica, for joining me on this journey back in time, for watching all of these episodes. When we got into it, I will say, I did not expect to have to. We were discussing this before we started recording. I did not actually expect to watch every episode. I thought, yeah, we'll get several, you know, once we get to like, you know, episode 4, episode 5, episode 6, we'll be able to not watch. We'll just, you know, be able to watch the last few to figure it out. But the problem was every time I would do that, there would be some nugget in an early episode about, ooh, this relates to it, which in a normal season, we take notes throughout the whole season. And so that's why once we get to when someone gets voted out, we could be like, aha, but in episode 2, this happened. So we wanted to give that same sort of coverage. So we watched all.
And I think when you were explaining this process to me, I just wasn't paying enough attention to what I was going to have to do. And I was like, oh yeah, that sounds great. Let's do that. Yeah, sure. I love it. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
And then I went, wait, I have to watch how many episodes? So it has been a lot. So to everyone who has been partaking in this journey with us, thank you. We really appreciate it because obviously we do this because we are fans of the show, but we know that the fans out there appreciate it as well. So we love the feedback. We love that you listen and we love to hear your thoughts. So this journey through time was a lot, but I hope you enjoyed it because we also had a great time doing it. And now we can take a breather.
Yes, well, a breather.
With Big Brother.
Yeah, Big Brother. Yeah, and I don't have a breather this week. I have tomorrow I'm playing in a game of Sequester, a Sequester Mini. You know, then on Saturday we're recording Big Brother. And then on Sunday, I believe I will be on the Big Brother recap. So it is just, you know, I don't understand this breather of
I'm going to say I'm getting
fun.
A breather.
It's fun.
You know what my life has been consisting of. So
yes. Yeah. You're getting a breather from this.
I'll take it. I'll take it.
Yeah. But whatever, even though this was a lot more than we both originally bargained for, I still think it was
for
a lot.
Sure.
I think every podcast we got on, we were like, oh my gosh, this, you know, who would remember this? I do think that I will probably, once I catch up on other television that I haven't seen yet, because I've been, you know, spending a whole weekend watching Survivor. I do think there will be seasons that I'm going to go back and rewatch now, which I really haven't
and
done.
I'm sad that I didn't do this before because I do feel like if you are interested in going on Survivor, this is a great learning tool to go back and watch episodes of other people that played the game extraordinarily well. And those who played the game extraordinarily bad. And then you can kind of compare notes and say, well, what works and what doesn't. So it was was certainly fun to do and nice to reminisce because you're remembering when you watched it originally and kind of putting yourself back there. So I had a good time. So I really, really appreciate it as well.
Yes.
So thank you, David.
Yes. So thank you very much. And to everybody who joined us in this journey, who watched, listened, whatever you did, thank you as well. And I hope you join us for Big Brother. If you're not a Big Brother watcher, then we will see you again when we do more on Survivor, whenever that may be. Until then, bye.
If you lost Survivor and you're feeling down, David and Jessica will turn it around. They'll break down the rules and they'll show you how. You played yourself and got voted out. This is why Blank lost. And this is why Blank lost. Oh, baby, this is why Blank lost.